When I was 6 years old, my parents packed me, my 9-year-old sister, my 11-year-old brother, and a lot of rice into a 1989 Chevy pickup truck to spend 5 weeks traveling across the United States. With the exception of a few pit stops at relatives' houses and one hotel, we camped every night. Sometimes we slept inside the truck, all five of us, my sister's feet at my head, mine at hers, and my brother on the floor. If we weren't already in tune to what annoyed one another, we learned pretty fast. My dad hated when we turned on the overhead truck light at night, which meant no coloring or reading Ripley's Believe It or Not after dark. He hated when we laughed too hard for too long, so my sister Katie and I would bury our faces in our pillows. My mom hated hearing us fight, which happened in between laughing fits. My brother Andrew hated when I fell asleep on his shoulder, and once I tore up sticky tack, put it on a plate, and told him it was his only supper for the night. He hated that too. My sleeping partner and only sister Katie hated when I made fun of her love for Elton John cassette tapes, which we listened to in between the Last of the Mohicans soundtrack and Carole King. I hated when my siblings made me feel stupid, but I loved when they applauded my grasp of simple division, which they taught me on the way to Zion National Park. But most of what I remember is the food. Once, my mom couldn't find regular milk at the convenience store, so we ate chocolate milk on our Cheerios. When all we had was sunflower seed bread, no white, not even plain wheat bread, I sat in the Yellowstone parking lot and picked all the seeds out until my sandwich was a pile of crumbs. And in the redwood forest, my whole family, me, Katie, Andrew, Mom and Dad, all five of us laughed until we cried because the spaghetti my mom made over a portable stove was so runny that whole servings slid off our plates into the national forest. From Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, this is Stories on Tap. Our podcast today was recorded live at the Cherry Alley Cafe last month for our travel event. Here's our third place winner, Misha Krasitsky.
There we were sitting on the edge of the road, if you can call this dirt track that had just been cut in the Amazon jungle a road. We'd been there all day waiting for the bus that never came. You've seen the newspaper headlines, bus plunges from cliff in Andes Mountains. Maybe that's where the damn bus was. The prospect of spending another night in the open air hut with snakes hanging down from the rafters overhead was becoming appealing. And that's when we saw the dirty Isuzu Trooper bouncing down the road towards us. Two Anglo-looking guys in the front pulled over. We hopped in the back, and that was the beginning of two of the strangest days of our month-long trek through Ecuador. Their story unfolded bit by bit over the course of the days, mostly when the old man was apart from the group. The old guy's name was Frank, and the young guy's name was Bill. It became pretty apparent that Frank had spent most of his life working for the CIA in Central and South America. His day job had been in working with international mining corporations. Kind of get the picture. He had recently retired, but not for long. Apparently, someone in Boston had died, and one of their heirs found the 100-year-old hand-drawn map of a remote river valley in Ecuador with an X marking the spot where the gold was. This heir knew Frank. They knew that he knew about mining. They knew that he knew his way around South America. So they hired him to find the gold. Problem was, Frank didn't know anything about surface mining. So he found this guy, Bill, up in the Yukon, who was a placer miner, surface miner. And even though these guys appeared to us to have known each other forever based on the bickering, the constant bickering in the front seat, they had only just met. The guy had just picked him up at the airport 2 days earlier. So, after traveling with them for 2 days, at the end of the second day, we were pretty much at the end of the road. We were at a frontier oil industry boom town. And I had learned that there were no rooms available at all in this town, but no one else in our party seemed to be worried about it. We were casually having dinner. And when Frank went to the bathroom, I asked Bill, where are we gonna stay tonight? He said, don't worry, Frank will take care of it. Frank's a hero in this town. So it turned out, some years earlier, the hotel owner's son had been in a serious accident, mining accident, or drilling accident, and Frank found him a helicopter and flew him out and saved his life. So sure enough, after dinner, we all had nice rooms for the night, and that was the end of our trip together. The next morning, Bill and Frank were meeting some military helicopters to fly down the River of Gold. And Nancy and I got back on a public bus, one of those buses where you can't stand up without hitting your head, chickens and goats on it, and old peasant ladies with hummingbirds tied to their fingers. A couple weeks later, we're back in Quito, getting ready to head back to Lewisburg. We're on a city bus, riding past the shiny new International Skyscraper Hotel. And lo and behold, there's the dirty old Isuzu Trooper parked in front of it. Bill and Frank are out in the sunshine, bare-chested, smiling. They're putting on freshly pressed white shirts. They're getting ready to go into the hotel to have a meeting, perhaps, with some good news for somebody. We never really found out what happened on the River of Gold.
Continued in this way, letting his horse choose the way, because he believed, and this consisted the true spirit of adventure, and I knew what I had to do next. I knew my next big project was going to be an experiment. I was going to throw myself out in the world and let my metaphorical horse choose the way and see what happened. And so I started this experiment with a map and a dart. I literally put the map on the board. I was pulling for Australia and Canada, two English-speaking countries I'd never been to. I hit Mexico. So I saved some money, I stowed all of my stuff, and I went to Juarez. And I hung around in Juarez waiting for the horse to tell me where to go. I didn't speak Spanish, I didn't have a map, I didn't have a guidebook, I knew nothing about Mexico. It was hard to know when the horse was talking to me. But I saw a bus, and it said Chihuahua on the front. I had an aunt who had a Chihuahua, a dog. And so I went to the train station, I bought a ticket, and I went to Chihuahua. This is absolutely true. I went to Chihuahua a few days later. I was in a cantina. There was a newspaper, and it said Hermosillo on the front. I didn't know where Hermosillo was. I didn't even know that was how it was pronounced at the time. So I bought a train ticket, and I went to Hermosillo. And then that night, I'm going the next morning, and that night my horse decided I should get really, really sick. And I did. I got really, really sick. But I had the ticket. This was a low-budget affair, so I couldn't very well afford to give the ticket up. So I went down, I got on the train, I'm on the train, it's a 36-hour trip. I was really miserable. I hated this idea. This was the stupidest thing I'd ever done. I was ready to, if I lived, if I didn't die on the train, I was going to get off and go back home and just to hell with it. There was one thing going for me. There were 22 gorgeous women about my age on the train, and they were taking care of me. They fed me, they gave me food, they gave me water, and they would talk among themselves. And every now and then it was clear they were asking me questions. They would interrogate me. And then they would argue among themselves, and they would ask me more things. And I had no idea what they were talking about, but they kept going at it as if they did it long enough and often enough and slowly enough and clearly enough. I would understand, but I couldn't understand. All I could do is sleep and drink a little bit and puke, and that's what I did all the way to Hermosillo. When we got there, it was dark. I felt better by the time we got there. It kind of magically lifted. We get there, I get off the train, I have no idea where to go, and the 22 girls are all huddling around. They don't know quite what to do either, and one of them says, "Gringo Banga," which means white guy, come here. And so I went with them. The horse had spoken. I went with them, and we piled in a pickup truck, and we drove for a long time. We went to a house. I had no idea where I was. I didn't even know which coast I was on. I just knew we'd gone to Hermosillo and then we had left. So we go to this house and there's a birthday party and there was a donkey pinata, and there was food and drink and everything, and that was fun. And then we all slept on the floor and we got up the next morning. And that was okay. I felt great. And there was all this action, all this excitement and packing and whatnot. And they said, "Gringo Banga," and we piled in the truck and we drove a long time and we went to the beach. And I don't like the beach. I don't like the sand. I don't like the sunburn. I don't like the people, you know, crowded all around. But this was an empty beach. It's just me and 22 gorgeous women. Hush. And 22 gorgeous women. And that was great. There was, you know, we played in the ocean and there's mineral oil and stuff like that. And then we went back to Gringo Banga. We get back in the truck. We go back to the beach house. And we have a little siesta and we get dressed. And then it's dark and women start to get dressed up. And I mean, they got dressed up, which in Mexico in 1986 meant Madonna. So heels and fishnet hose and little mini skirts and the bustier kind of thing, you know, the look. And Gringo Banga, and we pile in the truck and we go to a disco. And it was a huge disco. It was loud and packed, and I thought this was great. But now the next day, they had a chaperone, an elder lady, and her son came, and he finally translated and told me what was going on. These women had just graduated from social worker school. And this was their graduation trip, and I was their first project. And he's translating, he's telling me all this, and he said, "Well, they knew you were an American, and they knew you were not a tourist or a businessman," hush, and because I'm going to finish this. And they knew that they didn't have conceptual artists in their diagnostic manual there. So they were in faction. Some of them thought that I was mentally ill and I had escaped from a hospital. Some thought I was sick because I was a drug addict. And then the third faction simply thought I was mentally retarded and had gotten lost and ended up in Mexico. And I had no idea really where I was. That was all in the future, right? We'd meet him the next day. I had no idea where I was. I had no idea who these women were. I had no idea what was going on. I just knew that I was 24, I was single, I was alive, and I was at a disco. And one thing that I knew, you know, beyond anything else, was that if you let the horse choose the way, and if you listen to chance, that sometimes Miguel de Cervantes and a horse and a map and a dart and a cantina and a newspaper and a dog and a bus and some wicked ugly parasites will deliver you to a Mexican disco on Saturday night with 22 gorgeous women dressed like hookers.
Slumber playing live at Stories on Tap. Before Alex was Dwayne Griffin, our second place winner, and here is our grand champion for the night, Henry McGuire.
So my story is about travel, is about going to new places and meeting new people, and this is about meeting people back in that golden age known as the 70s. December 1975, buddy, two friends from high school, Jay and George, and I decided we were going to hike up Mount Washington in the winter because we had tried it a year before with a bunch of guys. It didn't work, but we were going to go up with a small group. We were just going to do it. So we got in our George's Dodge Dart, and we drove up, and we got up to a motel up in North Conway, and we had brought all our stuff. We had down jackets. We had wool hats. And by a miracle, the next morning, December 27th, it was clear, it was cold, but there was no wind, and we said, great, we're going. So we drove to the bottom of the auto road. We said, we're not bringing crampons or ice axes, we're just walking up the auto road, and we're just going to go. So we started walking up, and it was about 6-7 o'clock in the morning. We had a breakfast. We had brought Dingy Moore stew and cans, but we had a Cerveza stove, but given it was about like 4 degrees below zero, it wasn't clear how we were going to really eat it. But we got up, and also we saw this Clint Eastwood-esque figure ahead of us. Good-looking guy, 6'2", beard, and kind of looking and said, what are you guys doing? Said, we want to go to the top. He said, so am I. Mind if I come with you? Said, great. Said, I'm kind of hungry. He said, we are too. Well, let's get something to eat. So we'll get some Dingy Moore stew. He said, well, let's get a fire going. And I said, well, it's pretty cold. We got this little stupid stove. He said, fine, we got wood. and we're looking around. He took the sign that said, caution, steep grade, rushed on the side. Just all of a sudden, busting it up with an axe he had. The next thing I know, we've got like a roaring fire right on the auto road, because no one's going up the auto road at the end of December. And he said, just give me your opener. We opened up a couple holes in the top of the Jimmy Moore can, stuck it in the fire, caveman style, and it's bubbling over. Pulled it out. Best food I've ever had. So we go, we walked up to the top, and this guy, he was sort of a quiet Western type of guy. He didn't say too much. We got to the top, and then he said, okay, how do you want to go down? He said, well, that road's kind of boring. Let's go down the ice field. We can just like slide down. And we were like, well, we could, but do you think it's safe? So just follow me. So we just slid down, and this guy said, wait, when in doubt, just put your elbow into the snow, it'll slow you down. And believe it or not, we made it down. So we think this guy is great. We're 18 years old. He's about 24, 25. And we said, well, where are you going? He said, well, I'm from Allentown. I'm going back home tomorrow. And he said, well, do you have a place to stay? And this is the 70s. We were very, he said, well, Jimmy, why don't you just crash with us at this motel? And we said, that'd be great. So we get in the car, little Dodge Dart, drive back to get a couple six packs. By the way, this is when everywhere but Pennsylvania had an 18-year-old drinking age, so life was good. So we got a couple six-packs, went back to the room, we were tired as hell. He said, well, tell us about yourself. He's rolled out his sleeping bag. And he said, well, you know, I just worked down in Pennsylvania. He said, well, I'm from Philadelphia. He said, and what do you do? He said, well, I work. And he said, well, have you ever been married? He said, yeah, I was married. He said, you like to hike? Yeah, I like to hike. He used to hike the Appalachian Trail up around Hawk Mountain. He said that it was kind of bad. Went there on my honeymoon. And I said, well, what happened? He said, well, my wife, you know, honeymoon, wife and I were camping, and a couple guys came up. She got raped. I said, shit, really? He said, well, what happened? Well, she never really recovered. We divorced now. And he was, you know, it was a terrible thing. I said, well, you still hike? You're up here by yourself. I mean, didn't that kind of freak you out? And he said, yeah, I still like to go hiking, but when I go hiking with my six friends. And we're going, well, your six friends, what are you talking about? So he took his backpack, he pulled out a Colt 45, he pulled out the clip. He said, these are my six little buddies. One, two, three, four, five, six. And shoved the clip back in. And so we looked at each other and said, well, look, you're pretty tired. You got an early bus tomorrow. We're going to go out and get some dinner. You want us to bring something back? We said, no, I'm going to get a 5 o'clock bus back to Allentown. So we went out and we said, well, okay, the bars don't close till 2. And if we get back at 3, and if we do shifts till 5, the likelihood is that we can get out of, we can get, watch him leave, lock the damn door, and no one will get hurt. And we came back about 3 a.m. and we made it so that we made no one suck. We just stayed awake like this, made sure that our friend and his six little buddies walked out at 5, and like Clint Eastwood just stepped out the door, and we never saw him again.
Our stories today were recorded live at the Cherry Alley Cafe in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. Special thanks to Heather Adams, Chris Wheeler, Jessica Paquin, and Alex Kallenberger, who you can find at clawfootslumber.com. Also, thanks to the Lewisburg Arts Council. On April 30th, Stories on Tap is hosting an open storytelling in Soldiers Park for kids and teenagers under 18, themed school. And we need storytellers. For more information and to sign up, email storiesontap@gmail.com. Music today by Motel Motel, Clawfoot Slumber, and the one and only Elton John. I'm Julie Louisa Hagenbuch in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. See you at Arts Festival on April 30th at 3 p.m.
you come from. Then I turned to Julie in a casino built-in restaurant. She says I'm lucky because I've always had a home. Moving back to Harlem.